All right.
I'm not telling you.
Just start. But it's start a really good time. So it is 6:30. We'll call the meeting to order. And are there any citizen comments? No citizen comments. All right. Then we have some new people, youth and governance people with us this evening. And why don't we just go around the room and introduce ourselves? It'll be obvious who's a youth and governance. In case you're confused,
you all know me. I'm Dave Gerkson. Welcome to your first meeting for several of you.
I'm Erin Decker. I'm County Board Supervisor from District 22 out in the county.
John Poole, County Board Supervisor out in the county, Salem Lakes and Paddock Lake.
I'm Danielle Amanda. I reside in District 10 under Andy Burke.
My name's Anna Wilson, and I believe I'm in like District 14. I'm not confident on that, but that's what I believe.
Hi, I'm Ignacio Perez. I'm from District 11.
My name is Bill O'Grady. I'm County Board Supervisor from District Number 1, which is kind of by Carthage College, Lakefront, in that area. Eye doctor and sometimes golfer.
I'm Mary Fasci. I'm the accountant here at Kenosha County and recording secretary for finance.
I'm Warren Avench. I'm the budget director for the county.
I'm Patty Murrell. I'm the finance director for the county.
Terry Rose. I'm District 2 supervisor, which is on the lakefront, primarily. All right, so we'll move on here. I have no reports to any committee members. No report. All right. Minutes of June 15th.
Second.
Are there any additions, corrections, or discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They pass. And then a public works resolution to approve sale of Highway F remnant parcels.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. I'm Matt Collins, Director of Kenosha County Parks, all districts, I guess. So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this item was tabled a couple months ago because there were some outstanding questions prior to moving this forward. So our administration was able to do some additional due diligence in order to answer those questions. So if you would like, Mr. Chairman, I'll kind of start from the beginning, try to be as thorough as humanly possible about this resolution in front of the committee this evening. And after I'm done with my kind of, hopefully, short spiel, because we got the 120th Harley-Davidson going on at the same time as this. We had 150 motorcycles do a parade run over to Petrifying Springs Park. So going from this over to Pets shortly. So if you don't mind, I'll go through a thorough review of this resolution, make sure our new youth and governance is fully up to speed with this resolution. But I would ask within your packet, you can follow along not only with the verbiage in front of you, but there's different exhibits within this with maps and everything else that I'll be showcasing to kind of give a background and overview, especially for our new youth and governance members. So back in the day, I want to say approximately in 2021 or so, we had a fairly large highway construction project over in the Randall, Wheatland, Twin Lakes area on the western side of Kenosha County, where we were able to realign a county trunk highway F roadway for road improvements. So that project is substantially done as of now. But what happened, if you look at this Exhibit A map within your packet of information, you'll actually see our new county highway trunk F road that cuts through all these different color-coded parcels that we're going to be speaking of in great detail today. So there's four parcels that are highlighted A, B, C, and D that basically ended up as remnant, we call them, parcels from this construction project that are adjacent to Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. So if anyone's familiar with our county park system, this is our westernmost county park that had a lot of development occur to really pay tribute to our veterans within Kenosha County. This in front of us is to kind of clean up the rest of the roadway project as much as the park project, because these parcels are not of real use from a park impact or recreation purpose, as much as it's not of use for a road construction project. These are currently owned by Kenosha County, but it is our intent to be able to sell off these four parcels, and we already have existing memorandums of understanding with contiguous property owners that have shown interest in purchasing these parcels to be part of their residential area within this area. So since we cannot use these parcels because it's not large enough, it's not advantageous from a recreation standpoint, we might also put them back onto the tax roll and give them back over so we can basically collect taxes on them, and they're more for residential purposes than park purposes. So moving forward, we had appraised each one of the four parcels in front of us, parcel A, B, C, and D, to see what that value is on each one of those. So what we have to do is we have to work alongside our committees and county board in order to not only be able to have the permission being Kenosha County Administration through our county board, so we need permission from our committees and board to even negotiate the land sale price of those four parcels. Before we move too far, it's worth noting with parcel A, that's on the top part of your map, and on the lower left-hand side, parcel D, those two properties were original to the purchase of our western acquisition of Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. When we purchased that property for the park, we used DNR stewardship funding, it was called, in order to basically reduce our county bonding by using state matching funds for those. There are strings attached because they have to stay for recreation purposes, that if we sell these off, we have to find a conversion, it's called, in order to find similar recreation property both in acreage and value in order for the DNR to grant us permission to sell these off. They gave us preliminary approval for the selling of these two parcels, but we still need to go through the county board, receive their permission in order to actually be able to negotiate and sell parcel A and D and remove them from our stewardship, but also gain other recreation areas within this packet. So it's worth noting with that. So this evening, we are looking for our finance committee to go through each one of the labeled parcels. And it's helpful to go to Exhibit D, where we have a general overview of each parcel, and I won't go through each word by word, but you can refer back and forth between the map and this Exhibit D to see both the acreage and, when we did the appraisal, the appraised value of each parcel. So later on during this presentation, we're going to be asking our finance committee to set a fair price for us as far as our administration to go back and negotiate with each one of these property owners through those first rights of refusal for parcels A through D. So parcel A is that small one on the top. That was 0.56 acres and valued at $5,600. Parcel B, that was 5.77 acres and that's valued at $190,400. Parcel C, 3.06 acres, is valued at $153,000. And parcel D is 3.27 acres, valued at $153,700. So we were able to obtain that in order to have what we felt through a third-party entity of what would be a fair price, but that, again, is set through this committee, so there's discussion, negotiating between committee members in order for us to know what that baseline would be that we have to get as a minimum when we go and negotiate with these property owners. So on top of that, when this was tabled, there was some questions as far as follow-up with the existing resolution. One of those items was directly tied to that resolution that we wanted to have reassurances that the committees and the county board had final say as far as the transactions and the receival of the funding sources and all the processes associated with this resolution goes back to the county board. So we were able to modify that to ensure that anything that happens meets county board authorization and approval. So there was a correction made since the last one that has been updated onto this agenda with this current resolution. So that, I hope, clarified some items that were of concern the last time. Also, there was a question regarding the land sale, those two conversion properties that I spoke of, because since Kenosha County, through other means, financially or what have you, purchased additional converted properties that will become under our parks. So there was a question, since we already had the upfront financial payment for those additional converted properties, we wanted to receive clarification from the DNR if truly the profit from the land sales of those converted properties attached to the map, those two parcels, indeed have to go into what's considered our parkland development. This account is for park development use, more capital infrastructure that goes to offset, so we don't have to use taxpayer money as much. So the question was asked, since we already kind of invested on the front end, is it truly in accordance with the DNR that this must go back into parkland development? I do have that as a handout and signed through the state DNR. That in a nutshell says yes, it does. And not only does it have to go into parkland development, but exclusively the financial gains from those two parcels have to stay within Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. So there will have to be a specific line item from our finance to reassure from an audit standpoint and a financial accounting standpoint that any monetary gain from those two land conversion processes, if the board approves, have to stay within Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. So those were the two main items that I wanted to clarify. We do have, as we do with a lot of our park development projects, we have to be very strategic, we have to be very thorough. We have to look into the future 5, 10, 15 years as far as what these development projects will be, because they all take so much time. And that's important for us to have a strategic thought process of how we're going to be doing our development, just like Kenosha County Veterans Memorial Park. So we do have a plan and a strategy for the use of parkland development. I don't know, I'll wait to hear from committee members if you feel necessary to go into the parkland development as far as future building and things like that within that account. More than happy to share that information with any committee member, but I'll wait to hear back from you before I talk further with this item. So hopefully that clarified the history, hopefully it clarified as far as the process, and then the resolution in front of us is not only asking to seek approval to move forward with the process of negotiating with first rights of refusal, but also to set that minimum dollar amount or value for each parcel, and that has to, by our county ordinance, be set by our finance committee. So hopefully that made sense.
All right, discussion, Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a chance to meet with Matt and the county executive to discuss this. I was the one that raised several of the questions at the meeting and request that it be pushed a couple months to a future meeting to get those questions addressed. So thank you so much for all the work you did to do that, and also the executive was very helpful on this. The issue of having to take any money that we get, any proceeds from the two parcels and put them back into Veterans Memorial Park, that was very clear, and that was one of the things we were asking about. So we got very clear information from the DNR that yes, we must do that. One question that I did raise was the other two parcels, the proceeds could go anywhere. County board adopted policy that has them going to the Parkland Fund, but that's county policy, so there's no law or rule other than county policy, so that's where they would go now. And so I'm okay with those funds going there, that's board policy at this time, unless we were to change it. But the one thing that Matt and the executive did commit to was an additional report that brought accountability to the Parkland, not that there wasn't accountability, but additional accountability to the Parkland Fund, to show what is specifically designated. So for example, these dollars for these two parcels have to, they can't just go into the parkland fund for park purposes. They actually have to go into the Veterans Memorial. So that's very specifically earmarked, and that's the way those funds must be used by law. Then we have a contract, for example, with Waste Management where that money can be used generally for parks, but it still has to be used for parks. Then we have, for example, these other two parcels that we sell, those funds could be used for any purpose deemed fit by the county board and the county executive. So the county executive and Matt committed to doing an analysis that brought that transparency in that the committee could get, and then it would be updated periodically. So that I was pleased with that, thought it satisfied the issues and questions that I asked at the last meeting. So, and with that, I yield.
Bill?
Just to clarify, is there any differential, Matt, between the proceeds that will go to Vets Memorial Park with the sale of these parcels and terminology between profit and proceeds, or are they one and the same?
I don't know if our corp counsel wants to determine if there's a differential within the resolution between profit and proceeds.
And I don't mean in the resolution, but in practical terms. Is there a difference, or are they one and the same?
Profits from, for example, the beer garden?
Well, profit is what it was originally valued at or paid for, and what the new price is. Proceeds would just be the net worth. Are we just involved in terminology here, and there's no real substantial difference between profit and proceeds on these two parcels, or is there a substantial difference? That's my question.
Profits and proceeds from the sale of the parcels?
Of these two ones that have to go to the Vets Memorial Park.
I think it's, from my understanding what the DNR has directed, and from looking at NR 51 in the Administrative Code and the statute in Chapter 23, I think the proceeds are what have to go into.
Okay. So I've heard different terms used, proceeds, profits. So it sounds to me, if I'm not mistaken, that we're talking one and the same.
I would assume so, yes.
And then just to review, you started out with your initial opening statement about the dollar amount and the acreage involved. So let me just review that and see if I'm clear on that. Parcel A, $5,600 and half acre, is that right?
Let me just flip over to my exhibit so I don't. So 0.56 acres and the value is $5,600 for parcel
okay.
A.
Okay. And then just refresh your memory on B, what it is?
5.77 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, wrong button.
With the value assessed at $190,400.
Okay, C.
3.06 acres
mm-hmm.
and $153,000.
And then the last one?
3.27 acres at $153,700.
And that's the recommended starting or opening bid as suggested to us by what entity?
Correct.
Which entity?
Oh, the Pitts Brothers?
Okay.
They did all four.
That's my question. I yield the floor.
Okay. Aaron?
So you had talked, reading through this letter quickly, you had talked about needing to designate other parkland as to swap out for what we're selling. But in here, and I could get a better explanation, because it says, additionally, the county, by acceptance of the deed, agreed to these restrictions. These restrictions in the resale or conversion of the use of the property are also prohibited by Code NR 51. If the county were to move ahead with the sale of the property without the consent of the DNR, then NR 51 provides that the sponsor shall replace the facility with one of equal value used for the same purposes within a timeline approved by the department. If we're getting approval from the DNR, do we need to switch, you know, swap out properties?
Yes.
Because this, it says if we don't get approval.
I'm not too sure on that specific verbiage, but going through, there's very specific guidelines that I've been working with the DNR on. that there's check boxes that you have to go through with the conversion, and I've been at it for about a year and a half, so I'm it's very rigorous, but it does have to be per acreage. So if we do sell this, it has an acre per acre that you have to swap out for recreation use with those areas, as much as the financial value of each of those. So we had to have appraisals done, even with the existing property that we'll deem as parkland officially within those areas. So we had to go through a process already to get to a certain point where the DNR felt comfortable with those guidelines, both with acreage, with the conversion, the recreation value, and the financial value. All three of those things have to meet a very rigorous criteria.
Okay, so this letter doesn't state all the things that have to be done, just one. So where are we swapping?
It's part of the packet, but I can explain it better if you'd like.
Yes.
So through the last, I'm going to call it 10 years or so, Kenosha County has purchased property for park use, but we've never designated it within that actual parkland or through DNR. So it's kind of opened up. So we knew that there might be a point through this Highway F project that those would be kind of open avenues for us to do these conversion processes, even a long time ago. Two of the properties are within Petrifying Springs Park specifically. We have the Thompson property and the Schaefer property right alongside the corner of JR and Green Bay. Then we also have the Highway C Fox River Boat Launch area, the kayak canoe launch. Mm-hmm. It's a very popular fishing spot actually as of late, but that used to be the old dam location. So that was always owned, I couldn't even tell you the history of that one, by Kenosha County, but since the dam was removed, we converted that over to be one of our non-motorized water access features. And then the final area, small little parcel that's almost like the same size, is part of the Mackey property that's adjacent to Veterans Memorial Park on the western side, right off of County Highway O on that intersection of O and F. Mm-hmm. It would be to the northeast side of O and F that we had to buy the bulk of, or about half of their Mackey property in order to make a 4F conversion, which I don't want to get into that whole process with the highway stuff because that's confusing too. But we had to buy that chunk in order to do the road project. And there's a sliver that we were able to use as part of that land conversion of the Mackey property of about 0.56 acres or a half an acre or so in order to make that Donna Carroll property with parcel A complete with that conversion. So those are the four properties that would be part of the deed restriction with our land conversion with the DNR that would have to be exclusive for parkland use.
Okay, all right, thank you. I didn't realize that we didn't take those two properties we bought at Pets and officially turn them into park when we bought them. So.
Okay,
thank you.
Anyone else? No?
I see there are six interested parties. And there are four parcels, so does that lead us to believe that there are more than one interested party per parcel?
A few of them have second rights of refusal. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's one or two pertaining to this project has a second right of refusal pertaining to those properties, but not all of them. For instance, the small 0.56 acre one on the top of your map, parcel A, I believe, that only has the one because it only would associate with Donna Carroll, the property owner, because it's part of that pond. So it makes no sense to have a second right of refusal. If she doesn't want it, no one's going to get it because it's kind of landlocked.
So
the others, yes, there's second right of refusals listed on there. And there's additional ones within those MOUs. I decided to include them even though it's not really part of this. Mm-hmm. But Five Star is part of that project. And we created a cul-de-sac where the old F was. And that was a bulk of those MOUs that have already been executed in order to have Five Star have that cul-de-sac off of, what is that, Bassett Road now, or not Bassett, but the old F, I'll call it. So that's not really pertaining to this project, but it was part of this comprehensive plan with Highway F.
Just for informational purposes, so really parcels, what we're calling here A through D, Five Star does not really have any skin in the game of A through D. Let's just go through these then one by one. For Graver, they'd have an interest in which potential parcel?
I'm just pulling up my map. Graver is parcel C. That's part of, there's a pond. You can't really see it within parcel C.
Okay. Parcel C exclusively?
And there is a second right of refusal for parcel C as well.
Second right for which parcel?
C.
B as in boy?
C as in cat.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So now we're on to Roberts. Where is their potential interest?
I apologize, I don't have these memorized.
That's okay.
Supervisor Grady. So I don't want to mislead you, and I don't know if we want
to. It says it's the same one as Graber's.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so it would be parcel C.
Parcel C, correct. Okay.
Now we're on to Carl Carroll.
Carl Carroll is not associated with this one as well. To my knowledge, I think that has to do with the cul-de-sac.
Okay, so and previous.
There's a road vacation process that's also part of this comprehensive project, but not associated with these four parcels. We're going to skip over that one.
Okay, we're on to Gearing.
That one is for parcel D.
D is in dog.
Dog, correct.
No, that's good. Thank you for including these because they're part of the project. It's just they're part of a cul-de-sac project or a different project, not the specific ones we're considering. But for the sake of completeness, thank you for bringing them in.
You bet.
I yield the floor.
Dave.
Chairman, I would move approval of the resolution to include setting the pricing in accord with the attachments, the appraised values in the attachments.
Second.
All right. So, you're, just for clarification, all these attachments are part of the resolution.
Right.
All right. Was Bill, you seconded that? Further discussion? Aaron?
No. You
okay. Thank you. Anyone else on the resolution? If not, we always call on the youth to vote first. So.
Or nay.
Daniela, what do you say yes or no?
I vote A. Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Now, yes.
All right. Very good. Okay.
I vote yes.
Aye.
John.
Aye.
Bill.
Aye.
And aye for myself. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll stay up here.
All right, then we will move on to the next Public Works resolution authorizing the Director of the Highways to accept $50,000. Oh, I'm sorry. This is on the grant for Kemper. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, yes, this is a resolution to accept the Community Development Block Grant to support the 2023 Kemper Center Building Exterior Restoration Project. Again, for the new members for Youth and Governance, we traditionally through our Parks Division have, we always seek different opportunities to lower our project costs through grants. So we do it with any of our major capital. So different revenue sources are always something that we're interested in, reducing either tax levy or bonding. And this is just another opportunity with Kemper Center. Kemper Center has a 10-year infrastructure building envelope plan in order to preserve the exterior integrity of this historic property. We went through the City of Kenosha because they manage what's considered the Community Development Block Grant in order to distribute funds through a federal HUD program. And this Kemper Center qualified under that grant to seek funding. So we're in the home stretch of receiving these grant funds that's distributed through the City of Kenosha. And prior to us receiving these funds, we need our county board to approve and authorize the revenue coming in, because that was not part of our original budget that is approved by the county board on an annual basis. So us with our parks administration have to seek approval even on the grant or revenue side in order to use these funds and leverage these funds for this year's construction project at Kepler Center for our building on goal project. So we're seeking the approval of receiving the grant in the amount of $33,675 this evening.
Will this cover all the work?
No, it will not. It's partial for this.
Okay.
Our work this year is ongoing, and it's approximately $130,000 was the work for this phase of our building exterior. So that'll be a partial assistance for that $130,000.
Further discussion?
Okay. Chairman, I would move approval.
Second?
Second.
Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? All right. Passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
I assume that you, the governance people, you voted yes.
I heard a whisper, yeah.
All right, verification. All right, the next item on the agenda is authorizing the Director of Highways to accept $50,000. Okay, there you go. Go ahead.
So much fun last time, I figured I'd come back.
Good.
I'm Chris Walton, CFO of Public Works. The resolution in front of you is very similar to some of the other resolutions that you guys have seen earlier this year in regards to Clement seeking some type of reimbursement or partial funding for some of the wear and tear that the roads will endure due to some of the higher traffic, the higher construction traffic from just the county expanding with the infrastructure. This specifically is requesting authorization from the Kenosha County Board for the Highway Commissioner to accept and expend $50,000 from One Energy for highway reconditioning along Highway K just east of Highway W. I do have a map, but I apologize, I only printed like 9-10 copies. On here you'll get an idea of where we're talking about, which would be this red line is about the 3,000 foot mark that this $50,000 would go towards. In the Public Works Committee meeting, they did ask where the access point would be that they're going to be addressing bringing in the products of the solar farm. That's this green line. You can see there's a little bit of difference here. My understanding of why or where this $50,000 comes from is this section of road that is in red is already in bad condition. It's about a little over a half mile. If you take into account our $200,000 per mile reconstruction estimates to do roads and cut that in half and then cut it in half again for our portion, sharing with their portion, that's where you kind of get that $50,000 mark from. Again, this road is just in such, this section of the road is in such bad condition that that's where we're seeking their additional fund, that additional $50,000 to help when we repave that. And the other strip of the road, I guess, is still in good condition. That so I see the head shaking. I'm speaking on behalf of Clement's words. It's our mind. But that's where the 50 grand comes from. I guess I'll open the floor to any questions that you guys may have.
Discussion, John.
Isn't the Buffalo Farm somewhere in that area?
Yes, it's right here.
Okay, couldn't tell exactly, but thank you.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm not as familiar with out west, but from my understanding, there is a Buffalo Farm somewhere out there. So thank you, Supervisor Decker.
They escaped a year or two ago, didn't they?
Sometimes.
Yep.
Lots of the animals escape.
Never have a roundup.
Yeah, close to my house.
Bears.
All right, anyone else? Further discussion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, we'll voice vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And I assume the youth also said yes.
Just a question before you leave, Chris. We're talking about remnant parcels, and we've done the due diligence for County F. I think there's a remnant parcel along, what road is it, Washington Road, that, I don't know if that's had a disposition or not, it's out there by actually County Road H, maybe a little bit east of that, west of Green Bay Road. Marketable property, a few acres. Is that something under your purview? Has that come and gone? Do you have any background on that remnant parcel?
I do not specifically. I know that there was a bunch of remnant parcels in regards to highway pass. I don't know if you guys are able to speak more on Shelley.
So it's not to put you on the spot, but I'd like to perhaps huddle up with the chairman of Public Works Committee, ask him to bring it forward, just so we'll be apprised of how that whole thing's moving forward. So.
Okay, yeah, I can definitely.
Okay, yeah.
I know Clement was involved in a lot of that. He's on vacation.
Correct.
When he gets
sure.
back.
Yeah,
we'll definitely send him an email.
Not particularly time sensitive, but just so we can get an idea of what's going on with that.
Okay.
That's my question. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right.
Thanks.
Then number nine, this is the bond resolution that's before you.
So
that's going to be presented by...
And John Cameron from Alderman.
All right, well, welcome. And you want to join him, or are you comfortable there?
Sure, I'll pull up a chair.
All right, good.
Before I go through the report, I did want to introduce my colleague, John Cameron. John has worked with Dellers for about 10 years.
Yep.
He'll be working with me with Kenosha County this year, and John has a lot of experience working with some of the municipalities in Kenosha County. So John,
yeah, including the Village of Summers. So, John Cameron, Senior Municipal Advisor, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to be part of the team, and look forward to working with everybody here.
You'll find a copy of the pre-sale report that goes through the details of the proposed borrowing transaction that was left at your place. I'm going to walk through each of the exhibits that were included after the written summary. The first page is titled Kenosha County Five-Year Capital Outlay Projects Plan. That shows the detailed project list of all of the projects that are included in this proposed debt issuance. You'll see highlighted in yellow are the changes in the project cost since the CIP was initially adopted. So the total amount of projects that are being funded through this debt issuance is $15,900,000. That is a reduction in project costs of $3.7 million from the original adopted CIP. So again, $15.9 million of projects that are being financed. The three columns kind of reference the initial resolutions that apply to each of these projects. The bulk of the projects are fall under a resolution for general capital projects. That's approximately $15.4 million. There's funds included for the CABA High Impact Fund, which falls under its own borrowing authority resolution. And then finally, there's a separate resolution for some of the County Truck Highway W improvements from State Line Road to County Trunk C. So that's all those three categories of projects encompass the $15.9 million. Typically, at the around the time of the budget adoption, the county board passes authorizing resolutions to give the county borrowing authority to proceed with financing of capital projects. Those particular resolutions require three-quarters vote approval of the county board. The borrowing for the 2023 capital projects is being applied towards four existing active borrowing resolutions. So some of the general capital projects are applying to resolution 2175. About $2,515,000 of project costs are applied to that resolution. A resolution that was adopted in 2022 for highway bridge and waterway projects, $165,000 of this financing is applying towards that resolution. The grants for the CABA High Impact Fund are applied towards a resolution adopted in 2022 for that purpose. And then the balance of the majority of these projects are falling under Resolution 2252. That was for budgeted capital projects, including road and highway projects. So the amount that you're on the resolution on your agenda this evening is the $16,035,000. That's the amount that will be taken to market to finance the capital projects for 2023. Next, I'll walk through the details of the financial transaction to explain the fiscal impact of this proposed debt issuance. Table one is labeled existing general obligation debt. This summarizes the county's existing debt outstanding before we look at the impact of this proposed financing. In the far left-hand column is your total general obligation debt principal and interest payments for your existing debt outstanding. The county budgets some non-levy revenue sources to repay that debt, revenues from related to debt issued for the city of Kenosha, revenues from the Brookside Fund to cover some debt that was issued for that purpose. And then for prior debt issues, there's money within the existing debt service fund from prior premiums, from prior debt issues that are applied towards that principal and interest payment. So in 2023, your levy for debt service was $18,761,374. Your equalized tax rate for debt service per thousand was 92 cents per thousand. So this shows how your debt in that net debt tax levy column, that shows how your existing tax levy for debt will be before we look at the impact of future debt issuance. In table two is a summary of the county's current five-year capital improvement plan. While you're only considering financing the 2023 capital projects at this time, we always like to look at debt issuance in a multi-year context. So we show the proposed capital projects from 2023 to 2027, kind of highlighted by general department and area. So you'll see within this plan, there's approximately $105 million of capital projects that are identified. Certainly subject to future capital improvement changes that will be approved by the county board. But again, all that's being financed and proposed this evening is the 2023 capital projects for $15.9 million. Table three is the sources and uses for this proposed financing. So at the top is the $15,900,000 of capital projects being financed through these notes. And then we have the cost of issuance and transactional expenses for taking the notes to market. So again, the total amount that you're borrowing is $16,035,000. And then we break that out for purposes of applying the borrowing authority to the existing resolutions in place. So again, the bulk of the projects are fall in the capital projects category. There's a portion for CABA and then a portion for some of your highway projects. Table number four shows the amortization schedule for the notes. All of the principal and interest payments on these notes will be repaid by the county's levy for debt service. So you'll see in the far right-hand column is the estimated principal and interest payments over the 10-year life of the notes. We're taking current market interest rates and we're adding 75 basis points to those interest rates. One basis point is 0.01%. So we're factoring in a cushion in case there's market movement upward between now and the time of sale. So the interest rates are estimated to range kind of between 3.4% to roughly a little under 4%, 3.88%. So those are factoring in some upward movement in market between now and time of sale, if that were to occur. Table five shows the tax impact analysis of existing debt outstanding, and then the illustration of financing capital projects from 2023 to 2027 based on the current capital improvement plan. Again, the only thing that you're considering authorizing is the 2023 projects, but we've modeled out future debt issuance through 2027. So in the far right-hand columns under the debt service levy column, it says total net debt service levy. That shows how the county's debt service levy would change if all of the capital projects currently in the capital improvement plan were funded from 2023 to 2027. So the debt service levy from 2023 to 2024 is projected to increase by approximately $844,000. The future debt issuance, if those were to occur from 2024 through 2027, the debt payments were structured so the levy increase would be about just under $1.5 million per year from 2025 to through 2028. Since our capital planning model covers a five-year period, the last debt issuance is in year 2027. If we, you were continue to issue debt into 2028, that would hit the budget in 2029. So you'll see the levy in 2029 is projected to decrease significantly. That's to leave room for future capital borrowings beyond our five-year planning window. Table 6 summarizes the county's general obligation debt limit. The amount of principal outstanding that the county can have cannot exceed 5% of the county's total equalized value. So at the end of fiscal year 2022, or the beginning of this fiscal year, the county's principal outstanding was just under $159 million. For purposes of tracking some of its debt metrics, the county backs out from its principal outstanding debt that was related to refundings, which was prior debt that was issued to refinance existing debt, backs out debt related to the city of Kenosha, CABA, and then the Brookside debt outstanding as well. So for purposes of the county's policy, your net principal outstanding is what we look at for your debt metrics, which I'll summarize in a moment. So under the proposed debt column, we have the future debt issuance outstanding from 2023 and factoring in future capital borrowings through 2027. And then we back out, future CABA debt that's part of the five-year plan as well. So on the next table, we're going to look at that combined net principal, existing and proposed outstanding, to see how that correlates to some of the county's existing fiscal policies related to debt. So on table 7, it summarizes three debt policy metrics that the county typically monitors as part of its financial policies. The first policy is your adjusted debt burden, so it looks at your principal outstanding, backing out some of the debt related to the city, past refundings, and CABA and Brookside. And your policy states that your adjusted debt burden shall not exceed 0.8%. Even factoring in future capital borrowings for the CIP all the way out through 2027, you are well under that not to exceed amount of 0.8. The maximum amount that you're seeing here in the plan is about 0.73% kind of in future years, but you're well under that here in the near term, which is really what we're monitoring. In terms of your debt service levy as a percent of expenditures, that's not to exceed 15% for your policy. The maximum is at 10% through the planning period. And then your tax rate per thousand for debt service shall not exceed $1.50. In our planning model, the maximum amount is $1.05 per thousand. So in looking at these metrics, this is typically items that you have in your policies. We always want to make sure that both existing debt and future debt, you're under those policy targets. You're under on all three. Finally, the last chart in our analysis just shows a two-year trend of municipal bond rates in the market from September of 2021 through July of 2023. I'm sure you're all familiar. We've been in a rising interest rate environment over the course of the past couple of years, but you'll see recently rates have remained relatively stable in the bond market. So again, we factored in some increased movement in rates just to be conservative between now and time of sale, but rates have been relatively stable for the past month or so. So the action item that's before you this evening is the initial resolution to authorize issuance of $16,035,000. If you choose to approve that resolution, it will go to the county board next week, Tuesday, for their consideration. Then from there, we'll proceed through the debt issuance process. The conference with the rating agencies is scheduled for the end of July. And then these notes are scheduled to be sold on August 15th, where we'll be back to present the sale results. And then the closing is estimated to occur on September 6th. That's the date the county would receive the funds. So that's an overview of the financing plan. I'll allow staff to interject if they have any additional comments.
Yes.
I would just like to clarify that the projects that have been removed from borrowing have not been removed. They have just been postponed. We might be experiencing supply chain issues. We might be experiencing various things that are keeping the projects from happening in 2023. So it did not make sense to borrow the money for them. For example, the Brookside generator replacement, we're reducing by $500,000. The bid documents are almost complete. They will go out to the public in 2023. When those bids are received and determine what we're going to do, one may be awarded, but the most that will happen is a down payment on it. So we'll have to pay the design fees and the down payment on the generator. The full cost won't happen until it's installed, and that won't be until sometime in 2024. So the estimate was that we would need approximately $1.2 million to successfully move forward with that project in 2023. The $500,000 would be borrowed in 2024. The same scenario applies to some of these other projects. I'm not going to go through them one by one unless you have questions. But that's,
can you go through them?
Okay, please.
Yep.
There's not that many.
No. The facilities 13 was an increase of $100,000, but really that's a shift from facilities 22. So that decrease of $100,000 is actually eliminating facilities 22 and moving it into facilities 13, because it's really the same, basically, ultimately the same project.
That's facilities 22 and 13?
That is the generator replacement.
Okay.
For the communication tower out at KCC.
Yep.
Then facilities 14 is the HVAC replacement for KCDC. Again, the project will move forward, but the expectation is only $600,000 will be spent this year, so the remaining $1.9 million would be borrowed next year. And then the triaxle trucks, we're having issues with supply chain on trucks. We just finally got to order the single axles, am I right?
Hopefully we get ordered the single axles.
Okay, so the expectation is we will not be able, we might be able to order these by the end of the year, but nothing will be expended until 2024. There's still a need for the trucks, but it doesn't make sense to borrow the money for the trucks since we won't be expending that in 23. And then the highway project 3, 4, and 6 all work for design fees, and we have been told by the highway commissioner that those designs will not occur or be paid for in 23. They will still move forward, but it won't be until 24.
So these were all approved via the initial resolution.
Correct.
So that next year,
right,
would be those dollars amount, yep, subtracted from the next, yep, year, because they've already been approved, correct?
So okay, that's where this chart comes in. If you look at this chart, mm-hmm, the money that's left outstanding on some of these resolutions is some of it is this money that we're,
okay,
not
around. Thank you.
Bill.
Just through the chair to Chris, when we talk about County K, that's one of the issues on here. Where is that geographically for County K reconstruction phase two?
That goes from 94th Court, which is where phase one ended,
yeah,
to 115th Ave.
Which is by the frontage road, more or less.
Yeah, just a little bit.
The west frontage road?
Yeah.
The west frontage road?
No.
The east frontage road.
It's actually not quite that far. It's before the bridge.
Yeah, east of the east front.
Correct.
Right.
Okay.
Because 120th is generally the frontage road, more right, or less, kind of, sort of. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's my question.
Anyone else? At the board, this requires a majority vote.
I would move
Seven
approval. Majority.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion? All right. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Right,
thank you.
You're going to be at the meeting Tuesday.
John will be at the meeting Tuesday.
All right, very good. We'll look for you.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Put you to the test, huh?
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right, we'll move on then to the resolution 10. This is the annual advisory resolution. You have it before you at 2.75%. Where's your pleasure?
I'll take the presentation of this.
All right.
So many of you are familiar that this is a resolution that is
required by the county board to have the administration bring this to the finance committee. This is an estimate of future year or 2024 budget increases to the levy. It also includes some potential decreases. So it includes estimates for things that are typically fixed salary increases as part of our salary structure. It also includes our class and comp study implementation. There's costs in here that are typical and expected increases that are normal, that are typical from year to year. And then there are a few in here that are specific to one-time expected 2024 budget increases. I'll go through these in more detail on the second page here. So in the anticipated increases to the levy column, the first one is personnel, 4.2, that's approximately $1.2 million than it is normally because of that implementation of the class and comp study. The second line there is the sheriff inmate pharmaceutical medical expense increase. We're anticipating that we'll have this increase related to the NAFCARE contract that the county or the sheriff's department has with the inmate medical provider. The third one on the list is the debt service, which Greg and John went through. That comes straight off of their schedules that they had. A 4% increase to the health insurance, single and family rates, generates $650,000 increase to the levy. A $550,000 increase to the levy has to do with the implementation of GASB 96.
Did I skip one?
Yeah. Oh, the Sheriff's Department. Sorry, $600,000 for a Sheriff's Department. That's the non-personnel operating expenses, so not only personnel, not only the inmate, but then there are other things that go up and down, expenditures or revenue decreases of $600,000. The GASB 96, that's an accounting rule change that became effective in 2023, which will then affect 2024's budget. We're estimating that between $500,000 and $600,000. Human services, non-personnel related increases of $300,000 on the low end, kind of net new positions increases of $300,000. Public works, $275,000. Joint services levy increase of $150,000, and then liability insurance increase of $125,000 because we've been running about that much of a deficit the last few years. On the plus side, the decreases to the levy that we're anticipating or estimating would be the net state supplemental aid payment. We heard lots about the passing of the biennial budget by the state. The figure that was provided to us was just short of $1.3 million. However, there are some payments that we've received in the past that's unclear at this point whether or not they'll be included as part of that number. So it's actually the net would be this $875,000, but somewhere between $875,000 and $1.23 million is what the increase will be ultimately end up being. Some use of ARPA revenue funding, we still have some of that left, and we have until the end of 2024 to use that. I always put in a bogey of $500,000 for other unknown revenue sources at this point. And then sales tax revenue, I have a conservative amount there of $250,000. I'll talk a little bit more about it in the general fund report that I'll do in a little bit. But we're running, even with last year's record pace of sales tax for this year, we've averaged between 5 and 6% year-over-year increases over the last since 2010, so I'm expecting that to pop up. But for the first 4 months, we've been even with last year's. And then last is the general fund interest revenue. That's a conservative number. I think we'll probably be able to increase that number from there. But so the long and short of this is the pluses and minuses. If we assume a 2.75% levy increase, which equates to just over $2 million. That's that $2,031,000 number. And if you subtract that $2 million from the $6.4 million, which is the net from the increases and decreases, that leaves a almost $4.4 million amount. That's where the work comes in from the end of July when the departments turn in their budgets till we go back to the departments at towards the end of September and then ultimately bring the budget, the county county executive's budget in early October. That's the amount that we'll have to find in order to balance to get to the 2.75. The bottom section, I like to show this to put it in perspective for the average, I should say, for the county homeowner. So with a 2.75% levy increase, our net new construction amount, we know that amount is 3.94. So if the next year's budget would go up 2.75, the levy increase for the county homeowners would actually be a reduction because it's less than the 3.9 of the net new construction. Simply, when the pie is going to grow by about 4%, if our levy goes up 3%, that's the difference. It's actually less. And then if you factor in CPI or inflation, the last figure we have here for a 12-month adjusted through May was 4%. So if you take that into account, it's actually a reduction of 5%.
What's the cap percentage of that? From the state.
The levy limit?
Yeah, the levy limit is typically net in construction.
Right.
There are some pluses and minuses to that could allow us to go higher than that if that calculation were to work out.
Okay.
But not only that, we also have quite a bit of capacity from prior years of levy that we could increase even above that 3.9%.
Do you know what that is?
It's in the $16-17 million range. Might even be as high as 18 now. We'll have a firmer number when we have the rating agency presentation. So with that, I'll conclude the information that fulfills the requirement as based on the county board requirement.
All right. Your discussion? Anyone?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an excellent report. Thank you for all the work you put into this, and it gives us a good idea of where we're going with the budget for the 2024 budget. I would be okay considering not adopting this formally. That motion would be, and I'm not going to make the motion, that motion would be to postpone it indefinitely. I would be okay with that, but I would like to yield to have further discussion with the committee for such a motion.
Right now, there's no motion made.
Right. I place no motion on the floor.
All right. Discussion? Dave.
Well, I agree with Dave. In fact, I've been against this since pretty much every year since I've been in the board. Because my thinking is let the county executive come up with the best budget that she can come up with and take it from there. Whether it's 2.75 or whether it be 3% or 1%, whatever it is. I think that's just a number that really doesn't make any sense no matter what right now, because we don't really know what's going to be. And usually every year it's changed a little bit anyway, so I would just not do anything and just come up with the best budget she can and go from there.
What does the original resolution say, which required us annually to review this?
I believe the requirement was that it's brought to the committee, and then it's under the purview of the committee whether or not to pass it on to the
committee. Okay. So it would come up next year and the year after, etc., automatically?
Correct.
Even if nothing is done this year?
In fact, last year's resolution actually did not garner enough votes and did not pass it.
So, okay. Bill, did you have
a
No. Any other discussion? All right. No discussion. Is there any motion?
I would make a motion to postpone indefinitely.
Well, I think if you want to do that, you certainly can. But I think technically you'd have to authorize, move the resolution, and then act upon a motion to adjourn it or table it, or whatever you wanted to do. It's not necessary to do anything either.
Oh, okay. So just I thought a motion to postpone it indefinitely would be an appropriate motion on the item.
I suppose you could. I don't think it's necessary. That's why I asked about the original authorizing resolution. It comes up next year anyway.
Or we, as I heard,
you can move if you want.
Just make no motion.
Right.
Neither to approve or to not approve.
Right.
So there is not a second on my motion, so it is my right to withdraw it.
It is.
And so I will withdraw it.
All right. Any other discussion? All right, seeing none, then we'll move on to the next item of business on the agenda. The audit of bills is circulating.
Completed.
All right, very good. Is there any discussion on that? You always have a right under this section to question, discuss it. All right, so we'll move on then to reports number 12. Are there any?
There is a general fund report.
It's me again. Okay. So I believe you all have at your place a copy of the first 2023 general fund year-end forecast. I'll be bringing this report to this committee every month following. This will be the report that we'll use as part of our rating agency presentation. So drawing your attention to the box at the bottom, it's showing basically a break even at this point, just a little increase over the unassigned balance that we ended the year. So I'll go through the detail of what makes up that $45,000 increase. So on the items that cause increase to the general fund at this point, we're projecting a substantial treasurer revenue surplus. We're also seeing some unrealized gains, similar to last year when we got hit with the unrealized loss in related to the investments that we have with the rising interest rates. We're now seeing the flip side, which is a positive, which is unrealized gains. So I'm projecting that number at this point to be 1.475. The projected surplus for human services provided by that department is $550,000. A decrease in tax delinquency reserve of $350,000 out of profit loss from tax deed sales. Workers' compensation insurance surplus at this point of $275,000. We've had half a year's worth of claims, and those are coming in below budget. Well, Public Works is projecting at this point a $250,000 surplus, operating surplus. On the negative side, in the lower part, in the Sheriff's Department, between expenditures and revenues, we're projecting a $1.5 million deficit at this point, mainly related to the inmate medical expenses and other variable expenses and revenue shortfalls.
What is the major pharmaceutical that we're buying that increases this cost so much?
It's I don't know what this any specific, but because we're on the hook for any prescription costs while the inmates are there, we're having another year in which inmates are racking, I should say, the costs for the prescriptions are higher than what was budgeted. I can find out, though, if there's a specific prescription, per se.
Can you report that back at the next meeting?
Sure. I know, in general, that you know, the county's a large component of their prescription costs are these specialty drugs. And we've taken steps to try to mitigate the increases in that. But a lot of those are not the types of drugs that I would think that our guests at the jail would.
Isn't our jail population usually younger? And so, I would think like Eliquis, you know, that's usually right. Older people, and that's an expensive drug.
It could be mental health type drugs and that sort of thing. But I'll get that information.
Thank you.
We have the levy effect of the GASB 96 implementation that that actually is on. We were caught off guard that the implementation of that would be in this year. Otherwise, we would have been able to adjust for it in this year's budget. So at this point, we're projecting $500,000 deficit to the general fund as a result of that.
Tell me what does that mean?
Okay, so GASB 96 pertains to subscription-based informational IT contracts. So it's like our ERP system, our overall financial system, our payroll system, our Microsoft overall platform that we have for all county employees. So in the past, we were able to capitalize a portion of that and borrow for it. But with this new GASB, it changed it so that we can't capitalize that amount. We have to put that in operating. So it flips it from that.
This is a committee.
This is the Government Accounting Standards Board. This is they liken these types of arrangements that we have as like a lease, and based on that, they're looking at these as like we're taking on an asset and we're amortizing it, as opposed to being able to capitalize a portion of it.
At one point, we didn't bond for these or capitalize for it years ago, and then we switched when we...
Well,
I take that back. No, what I was told, correct me if I'm wrong, they used to not have subscription-based, so when we purchased, let's say, Microsoft Office, right. We could bond for that. Well, then when they switched to subscription-based, we were told that we could still bond for it. Well, now they've changed it.
A portion of
it. Changed the rules.
Okay. And so we're easing this in?
Yeah, they found that the rules that they had, or the language that they had in there that allowed us to figure out what approximate amount that we could capitalize was really vague, and it was open to interpretation, so they wanted to nail it down, and unfortunately when they nailed it down, it flipped it from capital to operating.
So is this a Fed thing or a state thing, or what is this?
It's a federal government accounting standards of change. We've had a number of government GASB changes and
as you can tell, this is number 96.
Yeah.
Sure, they give you the ARP on one hand and then your regulations on the other, and now we're going to take this back.
I mean, in the last 10 or 20 years, Dave probably remembers GASB number 20 or something. It's amazing how much of that.
Who's on the committee doing this kind of thing to us? I should go on that committee.
Yeah,
I
don't
care. This is ridiculous. IT costs were capital. You know, you bought hardware. Put software into it. It's capital.
You can't get software nowadays. Everything
is subscription. And then they change. The whole business model changed, where you don't buy a computer anymore. Everything's in the cloud, and you don't have these big data centers. The big data center is going to be in Mount Pleasant now. You know, so but they should still let you capitalize it. It's still basically. I mean, you're doing these contracts. That have a longer life than the computers had. I'd like to talk to them guys.
Please do.
Yeah, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board.
I mean, are these like government employees?
They're people that are appointed like me. That nerds, accounting nerds.
I see.
And it's like a lengthy process when they first propose these things, and they put it out to the public, to all the accountants to give opinion.
Exposure draft.
Give a period of time.
So we've been hearing about this for a number of years, and to be honest with you, it caught us off guard. I should say me off guard that it was actually to be implemented this year. Otherwise,
when we were at the conference in May, the effective date, and they do fun effective dates too, so it isn't like January 1st. It's for calendar year or for fiscal year starting after June 15th, 2022. It was over us in 2023 because our calendar year starts on January 1st. So yes, that was a conversation that we had. We recently implemented GASB 87, which was also due on leases, and we had to do different changes for our financial statements. But with leases, regular leases, we already expensed the entire amount, so it didn't impact our budget. It only impacted our presentation on the financial statements. So this impacted our budget as well.
All right.
Now you know more about GASB 96 than you probably want. The next is the $290,000 that we budget every year, the use of reserves for annual expenses. I'm projecting just a small health insurance deficit. We've had a good claims year, knock on wood, so far, and then some other smaller dollar amounts related to liability insurance, vacancy deficit, and I'm putting a conservative break-even point for sales tax revenue. But like I had explained before, we're even with last year's record first 4 months. And I'm anticipating that'll spike up as we go. So long story short, we're going to show it as break even. We'll have that as part of our rating agency presentation as break even. That's a good conservative place to be. That's it.
All right. Questions? Discussion?
Yes. I would say for the rating agency, it would be good to have some pretty granular analysis on the sheriff. And the last review, they were pretty big on the cyber security. So we should have a section, a narrative on cyber security instead of answering questions, actually put a narrative. And it seemed like we had a pretty good story to tell with this insurance program we had. Yeah. I remember getting the report. So I think it'll be even a better report this time. So that's all I have.
So the sheriff's operating revenue deficit, is that because of the inmates?
Yeah, it's the federal inmate.
That
revenue
being down $500,000. And then the $1 million expenditure.
What is it? It's a combination of overtime and medical inmate and pharmaceutical costs. I think there was one other one. I don't think it, I mean, that might have been conveyances again. We've been trying to ramp up those expenses, but keep going up higher than we were anticipating.
When it comes to inmate pharmaceutical expense, do we have purchasing that looks into that, or how is that evaluated for cost effectivity, you know?
The actual, the prescription program is actually housed, it's managed by this NAFCARE.
By which?
By the NAFCARE folks that do the medical portion of it. And from that, we can get information such as what supervisor.
So my question would be, at least privately, people have options if they feel that certain pharmaceuticals are too expensive in a particular locale, they can source them from Canada or from, you know, offshore places, as long as the quality is good. You know, I mean, medicine's medicine, right? Do we have that flexibility in our system? No, you're saying no.
The contract with NAPCARE requires us to purchase the pharmaceuticals from them.
Okay.
And what is the name of that?
NAPCARE.
Oh, that's the name.
NAPHCARE. It's a national organization that does things.
So our contract with them, generally a contract like that lasts how long with an entity? Is it a 3-year, 5-year, 2-year, what?
We did the RFP for them 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly when the end date on that contract
was. I thought it was 4. We had pricing, I think, for 4 years.
Because I think that would be pertinent to evaluate. I mean, that's an ever-changing pricing structure, pharmaceutical relationships, and so forth. So
last year, how much did that increase?
Towards the end of the year, they requested an increase because they were having personnel staffing shortages. So we did absorb a $300,000 increase. The Sheriff's Department used their commissary funds to offset that. So it would be a budget.
But in the budget, was it up?
It was up the $300,000. The last 4 months of the year, increased, and it was about $350,000 more than what we had budgeted.
I'm talking more about the budget amount authorized as compared to the prior year.
For 23, I believe there's 3 or 4% increase built into the contract.
So this exceeds that.
So this
is over and above.
This is over and above.
Your actual deficits or increase in cost is
right.
A lot more than a million. That's why I say, how much was it between 22 and 23?
Between $150,000 and $200,000 increase.
Okay.
I looked that up.
So $1,200,000 spent in 23 over 22. I bet if we trace that back to the beginning, it's
and they're requesting a large increase for next year. So that is why the administration will be recommending. I probably shouldn't be saying that, but we'll be recommending the Sheriff's Department look at an RFP and look at that again to see if there's someone else, some other company that could bring in. But there aren't that many that do that.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
All right, anyone else? So anything else on this report?
Nope.
All right, any other reports to be given? Any other business? Seeing none, would somebody...
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And thank you, the governance, for being here.
Was it
exciting? Fast-paced.